Welcome back to Discover the Finger Lakes. This is Michael Warren Thomas, and visiting a painter's studio. Dick Kane has been painting for many years, and had a chance to sit down with him in person and also see a bunch of his paintings. And very appropriately, many of the shows that he does are outdoors because his painting is usually outdoors. And Dick, maybe start with some background on painting. Did you start as a child with paint, or did it come as an adult?
Well, I would say it began probably when I was, about 10 years old, and I was given markers or crayons, I guess, and started doing things at home. Sketches and drawings of Indians and canoes and things that young boys like, airplanes and boats and things like that. And then little by little, I became more serious about it and began to be asked by people, particularly my teachers at grade school, to do posters for different events and times of year. So it seemed to grow out of grammar school, and then I was encouraged by the grammar school teachers to take it up at high school. So I went on to high school, and when I got to Aquinas to go to high school there, I found out that I couldn't get into the art program until my third year, because they had such an academic schedule. So I was disappointed, but, you know, the time went by, and before I knew it, I was in the art class there and also in the art club, and became the president of the art club, and things began to get more serious about painting and art. So after I left there, I went to RIT and enrolled in the art course, which was very highly recommended countrywide at that time, and still is at RIT.
A graphic arts department?
Yes, in the School of Graphic Arts and Design, where I actually studied both the commercial side of it and the fine arts side of it.
And RIT just had to be right in your hometown. You grew up in Rochester, went to Aquinas, RIT, and were you doing sort of shows and things at that point of your painting, or was it more commercial and classwork, really?
Well, yes, most of it was classwork, and I did enter the show that they used to have, and I think maybe still do, for high schools, art departments, and it was called the Scholastic Arts Exhibition once a year, and I did enter that, and I got a couple of gold ribbons in that, and that was great encouragement to me at that time, and impetus, you know, to stay with it. But I knew at the time, though, that I probably couldn't make a living doing fine art, so I did have a couple of my first jobs were involved more along the commercial line. Like my first job, actually, out of RIT, was drawing the ads in the yellow pages of the phone directory. And I found that to be very basic, but a big help for me. And they told me, they said, "Dick, you'll probably only stay here for a couple of years." And I was there for over 3 years because I really enjoyed it. And I enjoyed working with the sales force. And it got me realistic about making a living.
And also a wide variety of drawings, probably, because every business is in the yellow pages at that point.
Yes. I did things for bowling alleys and funeral parlors and bicycle shops and car dealers and so forth. You can look in the Yellow Pages today and still see, well, I don't think any of my work, but you can see, you know, that's quite a process to be done there. And but boy, that gave me some underpinnings for going on and working then at a printer at Case Hoyt Printing in the mechanical art department, and then designing kitchens for a retail a business in Rochester and so forth. So each of these took maybe 3 or 4 years, and then eventually I did end up at the old Cordite company, which became Mobil Chemical, and worked there as a design director for 33 years and loved it, and found that it kind of overlapped with my desire to paint, because we had problems there with creating centers of interest and color and things like that. So I was very fortunate. I was blessed to have a paying job that, well, you know, it tied in quite a bit with my painting. And on every weekend, I would try to paint. And then as time went on, I found myself taking vacations to paint. And my painting, by the way, would be pretty strictly landscape painting. And my locations would be mainly around the Finger Lakes and downtown Rochester. And I worked on those kind of subjects, and I still am using those subjects, as well as traveling to Europe. And I've taken a couple of groups over instruction-wise to instruct painting to them over in France. And that was a learning experience for me as well. And in fact, any of the teaching that I've done, I found has been a big help to myself. And I've also found that there are a lot of talented artists in Rochester. I started my formal teaching at Webster Central High School, adult education, and taught there every Monday night for 10 years, and loved that, and really got into teaching, and then eventually ended up at teaching at the Art Gallery, Memorial Art Gallery, and the Creative Workshop, where I've been until just recently. I just recently retired from the Memorial Art Gallery after, I don't know how many years, quite a few years, and I know I'm going to miss that. But again, I don't tell my people that too often, but I learn from my students, and I've been learning quite a bit. And it's been quite a ride teaching-wise. I did get back to RIT and taught as an adjunct professor there for a number of years in package design, which was one of my fortes at Mobil, was designing consumer packaging. And I enjoyed teaching at RIT as an adjunct. So I've been teaching a lot all my life, but enjoying not recreational but very serious painting on my own in the meantime, and teaching workshops and participating in local art groups, including the Rochester Art Club, which I've been active in for, I think, almost 50 years. And it's still a wonderful group of people and fantastic painters. In fact, we have a show that just opened at Barnes & Noble that's open there, and you can, anybody can get in to see that for the next few weeks at Barnes & Noble. And so I've been very active with it.
It's up on the second floor at Barnes & Noble, Pittsburgh, and maybe through the first week of February, something like that.
Yeah, it's the Genesee Valley Plein Air Painters group, and we have a couple of shows a year. We also, in the Rochester Art Club, will be having a show come up in a few weeks out at St. John Fisher.
Well, we're talking with Dick Kane, who is a painter, and one of the things I discovered in going down to the Brandywine River Museum to see N.C. Wyeth's paintings that you know, illustrators and you know, in that case, N.C. Wyeth was avid, lots of illustrating. The actual paintings were huge for what was printed on a you know in books and things was fairly small, and it's fascinating to kind of see behind what painters do, and like I don't know, it'd be fun someday to see some of your work for Mobile Chemical, or you know just to kind of see the painting process or the kinds of work you did as you were working in that career.
Well, if you want to see some of it, it's still out there on the store shelves.
And, really? That's cool.
Yeah, it's still out there. I'm not sure if it's still at Wegmans, but I think that you will find that people buy Hefty bags, Hefty plastic liners for cans, and I worked on the designs for those that packaging system, and I worked on the development of the logo type for Hefty, and also for Baggies. They're the bags on a roll, and I worked on that packaging and the package that's still out there across the country. I can go most anywhere and find my packaging still there. Of course, it took a lot of work with my group there doing it, and also with marketing and sales. But it was nice being a visual part of it.
Yeah. And the plein air, when did you start working with plein air painting? Was that, again, a long time ago? Or you've been a part of some of the plein air groups for quite a while, I think, right?
It was a long time ago. Michael, I think that I probably was one of the first plein air painters around, one of a number of them, way back. When I got out of RIT, when I graduated, I went home and I got on my bike, and I didn't have a car at the time, but I drove down along the river and did a painting of the big round building at the University of Rochester. I forget what you call the building.
The Rushrees Library?
Yeah, the rotunda at the Rushrees. And that was, I set up right along the bank of the canal there and painted it then. And that's going back a long time. So I began plein air painting then. And when I would go on camping trips, like on a canoe trip to Canada, I would take my paints and paint on the spot there as well. So I never gave it a second thought, and of course there wasn't a fancy name to it like plein air, and I just thought that the best place to paint nature, which I finally love, is to go outdoors and do it on location.
Yeah, and I went to the University of Rochester, so the beauty there along the river is just gorgeous. I spent a lot of time myself, not painting, but exploring nature along the river and Frederick Law Olmsted designed Genesee Valley Park. We do have a lot of great treasures around our region to paint. The waterfalls, I saw the field of sunflowers that you painted. Probably the one on Calkins Road in Pittsford, or maybe another field of sunflowers, but. There's kind of an endless number of things to paint here in our region. It's a gorgeous region.
Well, you mentioned the sunflowers. Yeah, they're out, and I think most people around here are familiar with them, at the corner of Clover Street and Calkins Road. And it's the old Hopkins Farm, and it's run by a younger man now that runs it. And he's very welcoming to any painters, you know, that want to go out there and paint the sunflowers or paint his farm buildings, which we go out there and I go out there occasionally and paint. But it's become a wonderful spot. And artists are always welcome at a place like that.
It's a good point. I guess you might need to ask permission to do plein air painting depending on where you are and what you're painting, you just can't assume everyone's going to be happy to have you sitting there painting their house or their architecture, their farm.
Well, rarely will anyone say no, I'm sorry, but occasionally somebody might have a little problem with it. But it's very, very rare. As you say, people are very welcoming, and they're sort of flattered, you know, that you would want to set up there and do a painting, which in many cases would include some of their buildings. I did a painting of a farm once, and when I got done, they said, "Gee, we would love to have that painting," and I told them how they asked me. I told them how much it would be, which I always think is reasonable. But they said, "Boy, we're a little hard put right now. But do you think we could interest you in a purebred collie dog? They raise dogs," and they said, "We'll swap you a collie puppy for your painting of our farm." And so I didn't think it'd be a good idea at my home, but my sister lived out in the country, and I got in touch with her, and she said she'd love to have it. So I told them, yeah, that's a deal. And so we got the dog, and gee, my sister and her children loved it for many years. And so I have bartered in a number of ways with people for things, because it was kind of a fun thing to do.
Yeah, artists, I think, have always done that to some degree, right? And a great connection with people. It seems to me with your teaching that, and maybe with the plein air painting, it gives you more contact with people than just being in a studio working alone, because you know the general public during a. These days, plein air festivals and things, there's a lot more contact with people.
Absolutely. And when they come up and watch you, I think it's rewarding to get their reaction to what you're doing and answer their questions. I was painting on the cliff walk in Newport, Rhode Island, and two little ladies came up and they were watching me paint, standing behind me. And I was painting away, doing an oil with palette knives, which I paint my oils and acrylics with a palette knife, a painting knife, usually instead of brushes. And so you use very heavy paint. So I was really piling it on with my knife. And
it becomes sculpture at some point.
It becomes sculptural. It does. And one of the little ladies behind me, I think she tried to say it so I wouldn't hear her, but I was all ears listening, you know. And she said, "Oh, look," she said, "it's just like frosting a cake."
Yeah, I guess so. you must do some nice cakes here.
But you do, and you're right. I enjoy being out, you know, meeting the people. That's why we still do three major art festivals, is because most of all I enjoy seeing the people, and a lot of my regular customers that collect my work will come back and visit with them. You know, once a year I would see them there, and we'll see them there.
I hear you have a select booth at Clothesline. Yeah, what's that?
Yeah, I do. They informed me that my booth number recently was going to be booth number one, and it's in a wonderful location right at the beginning of a row of people. I don't know if that helps me much sales-wise or not, but it's kind of nice because I don't have a hard time remembering when people ask me what number I am.
That's good. And, you know, I'm booth number 365. I mean, they have a lot of booths there. So, and this is reflect that you've been there the longest tenure as selling art at the Clothesline?
Oh, I don't think I've been there the longest. I may have or be one of the longest. And I could be the longest. I don't know. I really don't keep track of that close. But it's fun seeing the people and getting their reactions. is very helpful to me. And it just makes the whole thing of painting more fun. And I have the family now that help me a lot with it at the shows. And they come and help set up and take down. And that's a big relief.
Yeah, and the you know, and that's in the good weather, right? You know, but as a plein air painter, it's really kind of appropriate that you sell your paintings at outdoor venues like Cornhill and Clothesline, and like you said, there's a waterfront in Webster is the third outdoor show. So it's kind of feels natural as a plein air painter to be out there.
Well, it does. You feel like you're out in the elements, and I always say that. You use all of your senses when you're painting outdoors. And it's the same thing if you're at an art show, you know. And I just enjoy the interface a lot with the people. And I go down almost every year and say a few words over the radio with Julia Figueres, WXXI. And it's just a lot of fun down there seeing the people. But I don't get out much to look around the show myself. People say, I didn't see you. I didn't know you were there. And you know, you didn't come by or anything. But I find the time flies when you have old friends coming up, you know, from the old days and chatting with you and looking for another painting.
It's a huge show. So booth number one at Clothesline, you'll find Dick Kane and his paintings. So if people are interested in your paintings, really the key is to come to one of the shows. And there is an indoor show also, the one in Canandaigua.
Well, there is an indoor show called Springtime. Springtime in Canandaigua, I believe. And it's, I believe, in April. We did it for the first time last year, and it's in the Civic Center, which also serves as the ice skating rink just before you go into town. And we'll be there again because, again, I got to use the word fun. It was a fun show, and we really, really enjoyed it. But also, we do, Michael, have over 100 pieces of mine usually right here at home in Brighton, so that people at any time could give us a call and stop over, and that's what happens. We have somebody coming tomorrow to look, and so we're here year round with all of my work.
Do you get requests for, you know, commission work for painting, you know, someone's house or landscape, or maybe someone who's just, they're looking for a certain, you know, maybe a sailboat scene with, you know, just something that they've imagined maybe or seen, but they don't have a photo to show you. They just try and describe what they want in a painting, which could be kind of treacherous, I guess, trying to reproduce an image that in someone else's mind. But do you get those kinds of requests?
I do, and I've done quite a few commissions. I like to think of a commission though as kind of a mixed bag. You know, I have kind of a love hate thing with them. You know, I love to get them, but I have trouble getting them done. You know, doing them, but I have done them, and I do. I'm behind a couple of commissions right now, and I do enjoy them. I'm kind of getting away from people's houses and their cottages and things. But if they have a natural scene of woods and trees and the lake and some mood, a lot of people are after a certain mood, I would jump right on it. I love doing that.
Yeah, and you have done at least one mural, right, at the Pittsford Barnes & Noble. You have a huge mural there. Is that, what's the background on that, and is that one of the only murals that you've done?
That mural, I did it in 96 when they redid the store, when they converted it from the Mercurdy's. And I was called by the architects out of Chicago and asked if I would be interested in doing the first hand-painted piece in a Barnes & Noble. And, of course, I jumped right on that. And just a quick background of the mural, it's 77 feet long. And I was offered places where I could do it, and I could do it. I could have done it right there while they were finishing up the store, but we chose to do it at home, and we moved all the furniture out of the living room into the garage, and we had the living room cleaned right out, and then I had large panels put up, a foam core, and stretched out the canvas off a big roll and painted it for a month or so in our living room. And it disrupted our house, but it worked out very well. And then we were one of the last things to go into Barnes & Noble, and the people cheered when Rita and I and the family came in carrying this long roll, you know, like a rug into Barnes & Noble. And I had billboard hangers put it up, Pierpoint signs, I think, and they hung it up in just a few hours. And it was an exciting thing to do. I look back at it and I see things I would like to change, but I don't tell anybody, you know.
That's good. Well, we'll delete that from the interview. But I did actually wonder about paintings. You know, do you look at them and, for one thing, how do you know when they're finished? Because I'm afraid I would tend to, there was always something I would change. I could fix that. I could alter that. And then, you know, is that the same as a painter, that you reach a point where, you just have to stop, or, you know, how do you look at them?
Well, I think the Pope, didn't he, kept looking up at the Sistine Chapel being done and suggesting little changes, and I think that that you have to know when it's done, and just say, you know, done. But one of my teachers at RIT, Alan Clements, said once, he said, it takes two people to do a painting, the artist and someone to hit him over the head when it's done. And that's a good piece of advice, because in my teaching, I have to kind of encourage people to stop at a certain point, or just give them a little hint, like, I see you're using a one-haired brush, you know, or something like that, when they start getting into a lot of detail. I personally am an impressionist. I like to paint the impression of a scene, or my own emotional reaction to it. So I don't get tied up with much detail at all.
Yeah, Dick Kane is with us, a painter, and taught at the Memorial Art Gallery for many years. I think something around 17 years. Rachel said maybe you started around 2000, somewhere in that range at the Memorial Art Gallery. It's amazing to see so many of your paintings here, and you're going to have a show in April with some of your students at the Memorial Art Gallery, so people can see the impact you've had on other painters. But are there some, you mentioned one, are there some painting mentors that you've had over the years, other than your students who keep teaching you, but others that you've worked with that you really learned a lot from?
Oh, there are, and probably my key mentor was Stanley H. Whitmire, and Stanley was the director of RIT back in the 60s and 70s. And when I was there, he was an instructor. And from day one, Stan kind of took me under his wing, and right up to his passing a couple of years ago, I was still having lunch with him on Wednesdays. And with the group called the Manhattan Group, which
that sounds like the nuclear project.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, we had a group there that were fantastic, and it's kind of dwindled down now. But it started in the old Manhattan restaurant, in downtown. But Stanley was one of my key mentors and influences, along with Sylvia Davis and Jackie O'Connell, Ralph Avery, Alan Clements. And what was nice is that Alan Clements left me his paint box with all his paints, and he left me, he also, we ended up with about six or seven of his paintings. And it's things like that that help an artist keep plugging away and working at it, you know, knowing that other artists see something good in your work.
Yeah. And the types of paints you mentioned, impressionist work. What types of paint? You've done watercolor, and what's the kind of the range of different styles and types of paint you use?
Well, my mediums include oil, acrylic, watercolor, and pastel. I wish I could work just in one medium for the sake of all the material it takes, but I love each one for different reasons. And I probably am best known for my oils and acrylics, palette knife paintings of nature. And but I still like watercolor, and I don't have a favorite medium actually that I work in. It depends on the weather and the situation.
So one of the paintings that you have here in your home studio is a sunset, maybe a sunrise, but that sort of that golden hour of light.
Yes, I just did this a few days ago. It's from reference from photographs we took on Seabrook Island in South Carolina several months ago. And it's funny, it was in a stack of paintings the other day, and one of my daughters brought them over, and I looked through them, and I saw a couple of pictures in there. I said, wow, and that just hit me. And that's kind of how painting goes. You know, things kind of hit you. If they don't hit you, you know, they're probably not worth painting or trying to. But it really hit me, the sunset scene. And it's a combination of two photos that we took there. One of the sunset casting an orange light over the whole painting, over the water and the sky. And also I inserted in it a two-masted schooner, which happened to just fit in there nicely in sort of a profile against the sky. And I like very much, I'm happy with the way it turned out. This, incidentally, is a watercolor. It's done with transparent watercolor. And I was kind of pleased with it. And Rita, who does all my framing, my wife, is going to frame that, and we'll have it at one of the upcoming shows. But anyways, answering your question, Michael, about mediums, it's like that. To me, I thought of watercolor right away because it's a watery-looking, atmospheric type of painting.
Yeah, and again, very, very handy to have your wife do the framing for you as you know, with this quantity of paintings, there's a serious amount of framing that happens here.
Oh, there's a lot of it. We get our frames in joined, so that part of it is done. But Rita has a lot of work left on watercolors, matting them and putting the glass on them and so forth, and then framing the oils and acrylics. And then pastels are another little bit of a headache for framing. And but Rita's done them all well. And it's a blessing because, unfortunately, when I come up against a deadline, I could never get them from an art store. But for some reason, Rita always comes through, and she hates having to do that, by the way.
Right, yeah. I would never ask anyone to do things at the last minute. But it often happens that way. So a great teamwork and putting these together, because Do some people ask you for them unframed just because they like the look of that? Because it looks kind of cool unframed, too.
Some do, although we show most of them framed. It protects them. And most people like to see them framed. But some of them do have their own ideas about framing. So
yeah, right. If it's not a good idea, do you say, well, then you can't do that to my painting?
Yeah.
You know, I won't do this to my painting.
That's right. So it's an advantage to be able to see them unframed too, which we have around. Now I might mention too that I have a daughter, Kathy, one of my daughters. I have three daughters and three sons, and one of my daughters has been coming along with me painting in the last year or so, and is doing some nice work herself. And it kind of pleases me, you know, that she's getting into it.
It's kind of fun to see kind of her vision of some things that you're looking at that you would paint differently.
Yeah, and that would be my daughter, Kathy All. Yes.
Yeah, and one of the things that fascinates me about the nature painting that you do is that you must have to be much more observant of nature than most people, if not because of the detail of what you're painting, but also just because you're there outside painting and, you know, the dragonflies are flying around you or other things. And people have lost that connection with nature to a large degree. And being an outdoor painter really, and painting that subject keeps you connected to nature in a really, probably kind of a deep way.
I love it. I love nature. My family knows that in my studios and my workplaces over the years, I've had jars of mud. I've had fossils, rocks galore, stones, pieces of trees, chunks of birch trees, things like that. All these little things. I try to impart that to my students. What I call the Zen of seeing, observation, and every once in a while I can catch a class when they're leaving, and I won't see them for a week by as they're going to the door saying, "Don't forget about your homework," and they'll stop and say, "What? You know, was I out when you?" And I said, "Observation, you know, observe, observe, observe."
And when you try to paint it, you know you're obviously the shadows, you're seeing things. It's almost a different sixth sense, maybe, that you're seeing a depth of things and a dimension, I guess, maybe, that's different than what most people go through life seeing, because shadows are not very relevant, maybe, for a lot of people.
Well, they aren't, but they're very relevant to an artist because it ties the painting together, shows the direction of light, et cetera, et cetera. And there are a lot of nature cues out there that you miss if you aren't out there. However, it's not easy because, unlike painting indoors, the light keeps changing, and you have to do some little sketches first, or take some you know, pictures on your phone or something to lock in the lighting, which ties it all together. So yes, there are a lot of things that an artist has to look for that, you know, average people or viewers of art aren't aware of are key components of the painting.
So, when you've worked with lots of students, what are some of your advice to people that want to start painting as an adult, or maybe as a retiree, or maybe as a young person? But what advice would you give them, maybe in terms of medium, but also in terms of how to approach painting?
Well, I think the best advice would be to have a sketchbook. Have a sketchbook and some soft pencils or markers, and get in the habit of sketching. You could be sitting watching TV. You could be riding in a car. You could be in a doctor's office, but do some sketching. Have a small sketchbook and keep sketching, because the basis of all good painting, I believe, is good drawing, and you have to have that skill, and it's something that you have to keep working at.
Yeah, well, some fairly famous people did sketches. You know, most artists maybe start that way, or at least start a painting with a sketch.
Well, Leonardo da Vinci is a good example of that. If you see any of his books, look at them, at his sketches of the human body and landscapes and things like that. In the same way, you know, with Sargent and all the good painters. Ralph Avery, one of my heroes locally here, he was a firm believer in doing thumbnail sketches first before starting the painting. So you start thinking and about the painting and getting sort of in the zone, sometimes days before you do the painting.
And do you need to be able to sketch so that something looks like something? So that, you know, I try and sketch an elephant, and no one would say it was an elephant because it doesn't look like an elephant. But maybe that's all right, because, you know, it's just, it can be your style of painting, and it doesn't necessarily have to look like something. Maybe we get too tied up with having things look like they're photographically perfect.
Well, you know, I still can't draw an elephant either, so.
No, I won't worry about it anymore.
But actually, if you do that, it's going to make it a lot easier for you when you paint. And instead of just going straight onto the canvas or the paper, that you've already have an intimacy with the subject by virtue of doing the smaller sketches and figuring out your values and the design of the painting.
Yeah, so obviously people who are interested in painting should consider taking a class, right? They don't need to be good at it. They can be a beginner that's never picked up a paintbrush even.
That's exactly right. I try to encourage people to take a class. The Creative Workshop at the Memorial Gallery has a whole range of classes from beginners to advanced, and it's something to look into. And I haven't known any of the students there that were sorry at all for taking a class at the Creative Workshop. And we have other studios and galleries in town. Over at Rocco, you can find activities there at Rochester Contemporary, and also Steve Carpenter's studio downtown is a great one. There are places all over where you can take some lessons, or adult education too.
Yeah, like you started out in Webster, right?
That's right, out at Webster Central, in adult education, and that worked out really, really well.
Well, Dick, I hope people come and say hello to you at booth number one at Clothesline, but also you can find him at Cornhill, the Waterfront Show in Webster, and then the springtime in April, Canandaigua, springtime in Canandaigua show. That's going to be soon. And then I imagine the art gallery will probably have an opening night or something for the show with your students at some point in April, May. People will let people know. So thank you for all your time. I really appreciate it.
And I thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure talking about it and passing on some thoughts. Thank you very much.